Eyes closed and determined to ignore the activity on the other side of the curtain, Yvonne lay back again. Saris's sharp gasp, as if made in pain, had her eyes flying open again. Were they hurting her? Half afraid of what she might see, Yvonne peered through the slit between the curtain panels and could not at first make out the scene taking place on Keeler's furs. There seemed too many legs and arms and hands. Then the glint of firelight on Ardal's piercings allowed her to orient limbs and assign them to their owners. Sara straddled Keeler's lap, her back to his chest. His big hands cupped her breasts and he kissed the length of her arched neck. Ardal's face was buried between the barmaid's spread thighs. Oh, it was not a pained gasp that she'd heard. Prickles of awareness racing across her skin, Yvonne watched as Saris bit her lip, her back bowing. Keeler's rough murmur reached her ears, too low to make out the words, but Saris suddenly gave a breathless laugh, and Ardal lifted her head to grin up at him. Her heart suddenly full and tight, Yvonne closed stinging eyes. So this was what her mother had spoken of. Queen Vysen had reassured Yvonne that usually relations between lovers were unlike those between Jalen and her mother. Always Yvonne had been sent behind the screen when her father came to the queen's bed, and she held hands over her ears as instructed, but still she heard his cruel and mocking voice. Still she heard the slap of skin and thud of flesh. Her mother never cried out, never. But by the sounds, Yvonne had known Jalen hurt her. Still, her mother had told Yvonne not to fear, that they would never choose a husband who was brutal as her father was, that they would never choose a husband who hurt her, but one who could please his partner in bed. And although Yvonne had believed her mother, she had not known what pleasure truly looked like. Not until this moment, seeing Ardal and Keeler and Sara smile and laugh and gasp. Would Maddock taste her as Ardal tasted the barmaid? The moment Yvonne imagined it, an ache centered deep and low inside her. Stifling a groan, she curled forward in the bed, clamping her hands between her thighs. But Maddock would not be as Ardal was, because try as she might, Yvonne could not picture her would-be husband smiling and laughing as he licked her cunt. Instead, his expression would be fierce, his dark gaze hot and hungry and intense. Oh, she would die from imagining it! Trapped between her thighs, her fingers were drowning in her need, yet no matter how tightly she squeezed her legs, the ache only deepened. She had felt warmth and pleasure while touching Maddock before, while thinking of him. But this, by Hanan, this need would kill her, and if Maddock felt the same degree, she knew not how he refrained from demanding she ease his arousal every night. But perhaps he had eased his own, and she did not know how to ease hers. A man had a shaft to grip and stroke. Saris had Ardal to lick her. Yvonne had nothing but hot cunt flesh and slippery fingers and a spot that she could not bear to touch, so sensitive it was. The merest brush of her fingertips against that spot made her want to scream. The only relief she found was also agony, for there was pleasure in pressing the heel of her hand hard against her mound, against that spot, but the pressure only increased the need. Muscles quivering with tension, she looked up again as Saris's sharp scream sounded, and was quickly muffled by Keeler's lips on hers. The maid's body was bowed in a taut line, her hips thrashing as her frantic hands pulled at Ardal's braids, as if to drag the warrior's face from between her thighs. After an endless moment, the maid's body drooped, and a grinning Ardal lifted her head. There was a murmur, and then Keeler broke the kiss, and his reply carried to Yvonne's bed.
"You got one from her," he said with a recognizable note of challenge in his tone. "I'll get two and see her twice as wet."
So that was their competition, seeing who could make the barmaid spend the greatest number of times, though it seemed a joint effort now, as Ardal cupped Saris's face and kissed her, slowly drawing the woman over onto her knees. His body shadowed, Keeler rose behind her rounded buttocks. Yvonne closed her eyes as there was another sharp cry of pleasure, and Keeler's deeper groan, than sounds that Yvonne had heard before in the tower, but they were nothing the same. For then, Yvonne had trembled with anger and fear, and now she shook with desire, her breath shuddering through clenched teeth, her skin afire. Forever did it seem to last. Twice was there a lull before another start, with more whispers and hushed laughter and soft cries. Finally, all fell quiet on that side of the curtain, as if each had found their release. And never had Yvonne envied three people more, because her body did not find the same ease. Never had she felt so hot, yet she shivered uncontrollably. At another murmur, her eyes slitted open.
Keeler and Artle had Soros's unclothed body tucked between theirs, and the prostrate barmaid already seemed asleep. Keeler's smile was a glint in the firelight as he bent his head to the other warriors, and despite their rivalry, Yvain could not mistake the easy affection in their kiss. Both looked utterly pleased, content. And Yvain was dying. How she wished to be lying as spent as the barmaid, but Artle and Keeler had pleased her with tongue and cock, and Yvain could do neither to herself. She could only clamp her hands between her thighs and pray to Mother Temra for mercy. Outside the eternal comfort of her arms, that goddess did not often grant it, nor did she this night. Instead, the goddess sent Matic to the chamber door, and that was not mercy. At the slight of the latch, her body's yearning increased tenfold, her need weighing upon her so heavily that she seemed incapable of breathing, of moving. In her cloak, she lay upon the bed in a tight ball, facing the curtain with her hands buried between her clenched thighs. Now he would come and wake her. She would take his cock into her mouth and make him spill his seed, and then he would lie beside her, as spent as the three who lay entangled on the opposite side of the chamber. Except she could not truly imagine Matic so content, nor could she imagine that easing his need would also ease hers, and that was not what he did, anyway. For a long span of breaths, he seemed not to move at all, perhaps letting his eyes adjust to the darkness, perhaps studying the layout of the chamber. So quietly did he walk, only the slightest ripple through the curtain as he passed it told Yvain that he'd finally made his way toward the master bed. Yet he still did not come to her. Instead, there was the faint click of ivory as he lay his sheathed sword across the rim of the tub, then the muffled thunk of his wide leather belt falling to the floor. A soft splash came next, followed by the sloshing of water and the rain-like pattering of drops against tin. And Yvain had not truly known longing until she finally looked at him. The fire smoldered, the soft glow barely touching Matic's skin as he dunked his red linens into the tub and began to wash, drawing the cloth across the broad planes of his body. Thick muscles were but shadows limned by orange light, and of all the wondrous things she had seen since leaving her tower, none had stolen her breath and filled her with hope, as did the sight of Matic, bare and at ease. Here was the king he would be, not ruled by anger and grief, but strong and calm, and with a faint smile touching his lips when Bone trotted over to investigate his nakedness. Matic scratched behind the wolf's ears before sending him to lie down again. Not once had she seen him glance in her direction, yet as he moved silently toward the hearth to hang up his red linens, she realized her presence must not be far from his thoughts. At the first shadowed glimpse of his arousal, the fierce ache within her seemed to hollow out as if her body prepared to receive him, to be filled by him. That could not be tonight. Thighs trembling with tension, she squeezed them tighter. Still a quarter turn remained until her moon night. Then she would take him eagerly and pray he could soothe this burning need inside her. Her heart tripped to a halt as the bed creaked and sagged beneath his great weight. Unprepared, she might have rolled toward him, but he was already close behind her curled form, lying on his side with his broad chest pressed to her back.
"This chamber is overhot, yet you are wrapped in your cloak."
His voice was low and gruff against her ear, his warm breath laden with mead.
"Are you cold?"
Burning, yet he must wonder if she felt dark magics.
"I have no nightclothes to cover me," she explained softly, keeping her voice so quiet that the others in the chamber might hear the sound but would not make out the words spoken.
"Nor do I."
No need to tell her. Never had Yvain been so aware of anything as she was, his nakedness behind her and of hers within the cloak. An involuntary shiver racked her muscles and she could not stop from drawing tighter, her fingers wedged between her thighs, knees all but touching her chest. Still, he did not roll her over and urge her mouth down to his erection, though she would have eagerly gone had she been able to uncurl her body. Instead, he told her in the same quiet manner.
"I spoke with the Gugians. Their situation is as you claimed."
Of course it was. But that seemed not a proper reply, and now she wondered if his talk with the Gugians was why he did not ask to use her mouth. Mead might relax tongues, but an abundance of mead could relax the body, too.
"Are you drunk?"
Amusement shook through him.
"I am. In the morning, my skull will feel as if a blacksmith uses it for an anvil."
"Oh." When silence was her only response, he shifted behind her, coming up onto his elbow, as if to look down at her face. She could not see him at all except as a shadow looming above her.
I drank, but not enough to soften my steel,
he murmured.
Yet you are steel when I expected you to be soft and sleeping. Do you fear what I would ask of you?
Pleasing him? She had no fear of that. No. He seemed to study her, though she could not imagine what he could see in the dark.
When you took the half-moon milk, you held yourself in the same way. What pains you?
Her cheeks flared hot.
Nothing pains me.
Speak truth,
was his sharp reply.
I do not lie,
she hissed between her teeth. It was not pain. I saw Keeler and Ardell with a barmaid and I was inflamed. Silence followed that confession. Her face grew hotter.
I should have turned my eyes away,
she admitted. The silence deepened. Against her back, Maddox's body felt more rigid than it had ever been. Was he angry? He had not liked hearing that her mother had watched the Alliance army from their tower. Perhaps knowing that Yvain had watched his warrior seemed an unforgivable breach of privacy.
It is not pain,
she repeated, trying to bring her argument back around to the beginning, before he could say she failed in her duty to his dragon again.
I know not how to ease my need, but it will fade.
Or so she prayed. Finally, he spoke and she could not judge his mood, for although his amusement was unmistakable, each word seemed rougher than before, as if his throat had been scoured with gravel.
How can this not be known? If I were locked in a tower with nothing else to do, my hand would be upon my cock as often as upon my sword.
Yvain smiled, but the pressure between her legs seemed too demanding and her chest too full to allow a laugh. She barely managed to say,
And if I had neither cock nor sword?
A woman only requires a hand.
The humor left his voice, leaving only grit.
I will show you how a Parsathian warrior tends to herself.
Her eyes squeezed shut as everything inside her curled tighter. By Hanan's blessed seed, how could a promise of release so abruptly worsen the need?
Please, she whispered breathlessly, show me quickly.
His head lowered, his reply harsh against her ear.
Quickly is not how a woman's cunt should be touched.
Yet the hard urgency of his hands belied his words. No time did he waste before gripping the back of her cloak and dragging the coarse material up over the swell of her bottom, bearing her skin to the heated air within the chamber. Her face afire again, Yvain's gaze darted to the curtains. If the others were awake, they did not look it. No heads were lifted, no eyes were open. But even if they were, from that direction little of her could be seen. Maddox drew the cloak so high it bunched behind her waist, yet in front the heavy fabric still covered Yvain to her knees. Only her shins and feet were visible, and only barely. Her legs were but a shadow, the jeweled hilt of the dagger strapped to her calf a mere glint in the darkness. Then all worry about what lay in front of her fled, when Maddox shifted closer. So much taller was he that although their shoulders were aligned, their hips were not. Her bare bottom nestled into his steely abdomen, and his skin seemed so very hot against hers, though not as hot as the hard length prodding the back of her thigh, or the calloused fingers that swiftly journeyed over the curve of her ass to delve between her clenched thighs from behind. Maddox's chest rumbled against her back on a thick groan.
You are drenched in your need.
She was well aware. Her hands were still locked together between her legs, her palms and fingers and inner thighs swimming in her arousal. She trembled as his blunt fingertips glided over the seams of her fingers, as if seeking entrance to the sensitive flesh below. But he did not force her fingers apart. Instead, he cupped her hands in the palm of his and murmured,
Do we do this slowly after all?
She could not bear that. Shaking her head, Yvain pulled her elbows back so very slightly, so that her fingers still covered the apex of her mound. His fingers followed, stopping when she did. A quiet chuckle sounded behind her.
You hide your sweetest treasure from me?
It was not treasure, but a burning and aching knot. On a strained whisper, she told him,
That part of me hurts to touch.
There is pain?
Yes.
Are you certain?
How could she not be certain? But her irritated reply was lost on a gasp as strong teeth pinched her earlobe. Her entire body stiffened, the knot between her legs throbbing as if that flesh had been pinched instead.
Was that pain?
His voice was gravel again, abrasive, not just against her ear, but scratching lightly over the span of her skin, prickling every nerve. And that soft bite hadn't hurt. Though the sensation had been acute, with a sharpened edge, it was nothing like the pain Yvain had known so intimately through so much of her life.
It was not, she whispered.
This will be the same.
His fingers moved gently against hers.
So much pleasure that you can hardly bear if it continues. So much that you can hardly bear if it ends.
She could hardly bear it now. Still, she trembled in an agony of indecision. You intend to touch me there?
Do you fear I will hurt you?
Yes, and no. Neither answer was completely truthful, so she had no answer to give. For a long moment he was quiet, his broad chest rising and falling against her back, his thick fingers gently stroking through the wetness between her legs as if accustoming her to his touch. Finally he spoke again.
It matters not. Every Parsathian raider knows how to find a woman's pearl, even when it is kept under guard.
She could not mistake the amusement deepening the quiet rumble of his voice, as if he meant to put her at ease in this way. Perhaps he would be successful, for she could not think of pain when she was thinking of how absurd such a name was. A pearl?
All Parsathians know that a woman's clitoris is a hidden treasure.
As softly as his voice was rough, his slick fingertips glided back through her saturated folds.
To claim it, first a raider must voyage across this burning ocean.
Still so absurd. Yet she could not laugh, not while pressing her lips together against the moan that threatened to escape with every slow caress through her delicate flesh. Strong fingers teased her entrance.
Sometimes,
he said against her ear, his voice harsher now, his breathing deeper.
A foolish warrior becomes lost exploring the wonders of this cavern. But any Parsathian who vanishes into these depths without resuming his search for the pearl will never claim his prize.
Now Yvonne shook with a laugh, because if she did not laugh, she would scream from the hollow ache building within her. Never had she wanted anything more than to feel him exploring those depths, which clenched and tightened as if trying to draw him in.
Madoc, she gasped.
His sword hand still buried between her legs, he drew her closer, wedging his left arm beneath her head and angling his elbow back to tangle his fingers into her hair, her cheek pillowed upon his biceps, until gentle pressure turned her face upward, as if she were looking over her shoulder. She could not see him, only feel him, his head bent close to hers, the heat of his breath at the corner of her lips. His touch roughened, massaging her sultry flesh with long circling strokes and drawing more wetness from her, as if her cunt were an endless well. Gruffly he commanded,
"Bring your fingers to my mouth so that I can taste your honey upon them."
Just as she had once licked his seed from her fingers. Need shuddered through her, but hot upon the heels of that memory was another, of the last time Madoc had drawn her fingers into his mouth, suckling away her brother's lifeblood, with his desire for Yvonne's death burning like a hot fire in his eyes. That was not what he burned for now. Yet whether he truly wanted to taste her or to remove the guard of her fingers, she knew not. At her hesitation, his voice deepened.
"I will not hurt you, Yvonne, though I might make you scream."
As the barmaid had screamed, and now that woman lay satisfied, at ease. Yvonne wanted the same, so desperately. Lifting her hands away from that slick, aching knot and raising them to his mouth seemed more effort than even climbing the stairs had been. More exciting than Maddox's iron heat behind her, more terrifying than facing a wraith. She had not known trust was such a frightening, exhilarating part of herself to give.
Yet the reward was well worth it.
Her fingertips brushed his firm lips, and then scalding heat enveloped the remaining fingers of her right hand. His hungry groan melded with her gasp as he drew them deep into his mouth, just as she was supposed to have drawn his cock into her mouth this night. But that steely length lay against her leg, and Madoc did not seem in a rush to take his own ease when he released her hair to grip her wrists, holding her hands in place for his tongue. His mouth licked as, between her legs, his fingers leisurely stroked. For all his talk of her pearl, though it was unguarded now, he did not approach that throbbing knot. Instead, he drove her to madness with that unhurried touch, until her body uncurled in her desperation to push back against him, until her breath was coming in great and ragged gasps, until her clitoris ached so fiercely that the agony of need that had filled her as she'd watched Keeler and Ardal seemed a pale and gentle pleasure in comparison. Then his hand abandoned her swollen wetness altogether, his slick fingers gripping her upper thigh.
"In this way."
Left hand still clamped around her wrists, his mouth was hot against her jaw, each word harsh.
"We will both spend."
Hard fingers urged her right leg to lift slightly. With a groan, he pushed his burning length against her, his thick shaft gliding into the slippery channel formed by her cunt and inner thighs. That hot thrust over her aroused flesh was pleasure with teeth, a bite that sharpened when he released her thigh and the weight of her leg trapped him tight against her. He pushed forward until the length of his cock almost brushed across her clitoris. When he stopped short of that aching knot, she clamped her lips to halt a scream of frustration. But even clamped lips could not muffle the sound she made as his hand slipped forward over her hip and delved beneath her cloak. The moment his deft fingers found her clitoris, agonizing pleasure sheared her nerves and her soft cry broke free. Immediately she stilled, her gaze darting past the curtain. No movement. Except Maddox's hand and his cock, which continued stroking her from the front and from behind. Except his mouth, pinching her earlobe again before murmuring harshly, "They know not to look. Scream if you like." Her reply was a ragged whisper. "I cannot." Releasing her wrists, his big hand covered her panting mouth. "Then bite me to stay quiet if you must." Oh, she could not, would not. But his palm muffled the cries that passed her lips as he set a relentless rhythm, his hardened shaft spearing through the sultry lips of her cunt, his fingers licking like fire over her clitoris, the burn so deep now within her, raging out of control. Maddox had been right. She could hardly bear this. She had thought release would be sweet, like the cool rain upon her burning face. But if this was a summer storm, it was rolling toward her on dark clouds filled with lightning, each stroke of his fingers a flash that drew her body tighter and tighter, anticipating and fearing the crash that followed. Frantically, she gripped the strong wrist pressed tight to her belly, trying to shove his hand away, to find some relief from the ruthless torment of his fingers. But it was as if she tried to move a mountain. Then the storm was upon her, a crack of thunder that split her body asunder, an endless rumbling quake through stiffened muscles, and in its devastating wake she was left breathless, shaking, and given no time to recover before she was pushed over onto her stomach, Maddox's fingers still stroking her clitoris. He braced his left hand beside her head as his heavy body covered hers and his demand was growled into her ear. "Again." She could not possibly, but she lay upon his hand and his fingers commanded more. A scream rose and he no longer muffled her cries, so she sank her teeth into the bed linen. His heavy shaft thrust through her clenched thighs, that tight channel flooded by the deluge of her release, and the storm was not over, for Maddox was unleashed upon her. Hotter, harder, and this time she did not try to drag his hand away from her clitoris, but instead pushed back against him, seeking the same prize he sought with every stroke of his fingers and cock. Then it was abruptly within her grasp, and she shuddered again, cries muffled against the bed, his thick groan filling her ears as he stiffened above her. She had felt the pulse of his cock before, had known the warmth of his seed on her fingers, but against her own swollen and sensitive flesh, the pulse seemed deeper, the seed hotter. Only a 7-night remained until he spent within her, when she would know that pulse even deeper, when his seed would burn even hotter. She yearned for that night. But until then, she would luxuriate in this release. This bedding had been nothing as she'd imagined, rough but not brutal as her father had been with her mother, and not what she had witnessed between Keeler and Ardell and the barmaid. That had been playful and shimmering with mutual affection. This had been more primitive, an eruption of raw need, and had apparently suited Maddox as well as it had Yvain. And although there had not been affection, there was some tenderness. As Maddox's heavy weight lifted from her back, he murmured,
"You are well?"
"Very well." "I am," she whispered. He left the bed, and her body felt all but boneless as she rolled onto her back. Her cloak fell open in front and was still bunched behind her waist, and the effort to ride it seemed to steal all that remained of her strength. From the foot of the bed, the splash of water told her he washed, and she was lazily thinking of doing the same when he returned with a swath of dampened rabbit fur. He lay close beside her, elbow braced and head resting upon his hand as he looked down at her face. Though he could not possibly see through the dark, her cheeks blazed with heat as she quickly washed his seed from between her thighs. Despite his release, his arousal had not completely subsided. She could feel his heavy length against her leg, could feel the heat of him even through her cloak. On a whisper, she asked him, "Do you still wish me to ease your need with my mouth?" His low chuckle answered her before he said,
"Perhaps tomorrow. Tonight I am well spent." as am I.
Which filled Yvonne's heart as she had never imagined. As raw and rough as Maddock was, she had not been mistaken in her choice of husband.
I was told that you would see to my pleasure, but I knew not.
Her words were lost on a strangled breath as hard fingers seized her tongue. Pain tore through her mouth, and even before her mind realized what was happening, Maddock is tearing out my tongue. Her hands flew to his wrists and desperately tried to stop him. She had not been able to stop him before, had not moved that mountain, and so it was not her hands that halted him now. His fingers stopped just beyond her teeth, the tip of her tongue in a vice-like grip. A sobbing breath burst past her open lips. She tried to shake her head, to beg, but the movement seemed to rip at the sides of her tongue, and the only noise she could make was a strangled plea.
Again you speak sly words.
Though it was only a murmur, anger hardened his voice like stone.
Again you speak of my mother.
She could not answer, only attempt to shake her head again. Her eyes watered from the agony of it, but the agony within her was sharper, deeper. She could taste herself upon his fingers, the fingers he had said would not hurt her, the fingers she had trusted to touch her.
You will not receive another warning. Do you understand this?
She'd understood it before, but there was no answer except a nod. He released her tongue, and she would have told him then, but her throat was thick with tears, and a queen did not cry when there was someone to see. Perhaps he would not see her tears in the dark, but if she spoke, he would hear them, and she could not bear that. In misery, she turned onto her side, facing away from him, but his next words followed and slipped into her back like a sharpened blade.
Queen or not, you are but a vessel through which I will take my vengeance. I will plant my seed within you. But if you wish for more, if you wish to be loved, you had best look elsewhere, for I can never open my heart to a woman who took part in the murder of my parents.
That had to be denied, even if it exposed the tears that burned in her throat and her eyes. I did not, she whispered thickly.
Perhaps not, but I cannot ever know if it is true. You admit you were treacherous, and your sly tongue cannot be trusted. Your sighs and your longings say that you want more than a bedding. But if it is love you seek, look to our children. Look to my people and yours, as you are so adept at securing their loyalty. But do not look to me.
Never had her heart felt so heavy. The weight of it held back even the tears. Bleakly, she replied, I hear you, warrior. He made no response as she rose from the bed. Perhaps thinking that she intended to wash more, as if the wound he'd delivered truly bled, not until she reached the hearth did he ask quietly,
Where do you go?
Where she was safe. I will return to your bed upon my moon night. I am only a vessel, so you have no use for me there until then, and I have no wish to lie beside you. But the wolves would welcome her. With a soft whine, Bone licked her face, and she curled up against him, with steel a comforting warmth at her back. Maddock said not another word. And it mattered not if the wolves felt her crying silently against them. It mattered not if her tears soaked into their fur. For Maddock was truly a great warrior, finding vulnerabilities Yvonne had not known she possessed. He could even make weapons of her sighs, transform her longing into a blade, and use them to slice through her heart. A great warrior indeed.
Chapter 16. Maddock. Early did Maddock rise, for that night sleep had not found him. With head pounding, he'd laid upon his cold bed until the gray light of dawn revealed Yvonne's slight form, curled up between the two wolves in front of the hearth. Heavily she slept. Even when he finished dressing and crouched beside her, she did not stir. Her hood was up, but failed to conceal her thin face or the reddened skin around her eyes. Her fingers were tangled in Bone's thick fur. The wolves lifted their heads, but he quietly bade them to stay. Then gave the same command to Keeler when that warrior disentangled himself from the barmaid. With Ardal and Danaw at his back, Maddock made his way downstairs where the travelers and soldiers who had not found rooms were sprawled sleeping over tables and benches. He looked to Danaw.
See that Yvonne's meal is taken to our chambers.
So that she would not have to shove aside a soldier's feet before eating. With a nod, Danaw went in search of the innkeeper. In silence, Ardal accompanied him to the blacksmith's. If it had been Danaw walking beside him, Maddock would not have wondered at how quiet she remained. But Ardal's silence was censure, just as his warriors had treated his bride to similar censure the previous eve. Ardal's disapproval now was likely in response to his bride's decision to sleep on the floor. His warriors might have heard Yvonne's pleasure, but they could not have heard what prompted her to leave their bed. No doubt they believed she punished Maddock for some insult. That misconception would not be dispelled by him. Better they believed he deserved her punishment than reveal how she had spoken with a sly tongue, or that he had failed to fulfill his vow. The last made shame fester within his chest, only because she had not directly spoken of his mother had he spared her. But he had warned her against speaking with a sly tongue earlier that eve, and still gave her another warning rather than a follow-through. But if she had spoken directly, Madoc knew not whether he'd have ripped out her tongue, or if he would have become an oath-breaker, the most reviled of all Parsathian warriors. Never had he imagined his honor would be brought so low. So Ardal and the others could believe what they wished. Whatever reason they thought Yvain had to punish him could not compare to the contemptible weakness exposed in his warrior's heart. Each leading two horses, he and Ardal returned to the stables. That the remaining members of his dragon also refused to speak to him was expected. Less expected was Keeler's presence. Madoc told the warrior to remain with Yvain. Instead, young Torek was missing. Madoc frowned at his friend, who met his gaze with an anger unconcealed. No doubt he would soon hear what his dragon believed he had done.
"Where is my bride? Still breaking her fast with Torek at her side? She insisted upon dining in the common room."
Of course she had. There was more to see and more people to watch than in their bedchamber. But that could not be what had angered his warriors. Madoc waited. Keeler continued.
"I urged her to linger over her meal." "Why? So that she would not witness your dragon deliver a much-needed blow."
Torn between amusement and irritation, Madoc began to ready his mount.
"Lay it upon me, then, after you tell me what I have done. You sent our future queen from your bed and forced her to sleep with the dogs."
Saddle in hand, Madoc stilled.
"What do you say? You made her sleep with the dogs?"
Each word was a sharp bite. By Stranek's split tongue, little wonder they had given him their silence. They had not thought she punished him. Instead, they believed he'd punished her, humiliated her for his warriors and the barmaid to see. An unworthy king he would truly be then. Sardonic humor twisted his mouth.
"It was her choice to leave my bed."
His warrior stared at him. Face slack with disbelief, Keeler slowly said,
"She chose to lie with the wolves rather than to lie with you?"
An affirmative grunt served as Madoc's response. He settled the saddle onto his mount's back, and the gray gelding shifted uneasily when the warrior's laughter erupted throughout the stables. He would not put Yvain upon this horse then, not if loud noises so easily disturbed him. And as his admission lifted the dragon's censure, grinning, Keeler led his own horse alongside Madoc's and began to saddle him. Full of amusement, the warrior asked,
"What did you say to her that she would rather lie with dogs?" "Only what needed to be said."
Though the words had injured her, they had been truth. It was best she built no expectations of love that would never be. Madoc could not love a woman who might have taken part in the murder of his parents. He could not love a woman he could never trust. Though he could want her more fiercely than he had ever wanted another.
"Only what needed to be said?"
Keeler echoed, eyeing him curiously.
"Just as she said to you in secret last eve?"
That Madoc was only a warrior, not a king. His fingers faltered upon the leathers that tied his furs to the saddle. Still her words pierced him through, yet they had carried a lesson he needed to learn. But he could not truthfully say that his lesson had been for Yvain. It was best that she did not hope to win his heart, but she had also never spoken of such a hope. The marriage she had proposed would allow for vengeance and to strengthen the alliance. Not one word had she uttered about love or companionship, likely because everything Madoc had said and done already taught her not to hope for them. She had not asked for his heart last night. She had only asked for release. It was Madoc who had wanted more. It was he who had drawn her close when he had first come to their bed. It was he who had been so overcome with need that he had rutted upon her like a boar. It was he who had been filled with such tenderness and affection toward her until her sly words had abruptly reminded him that she could not be trusted. But he should not have needed the reminder. That he had forgotten even briefly was a betrayal of his queen and king. He would not care for a woman who might have played a part in their murders. It had not been her sighs and longing that prompted his words, however. Instead, it was his own heart that needed the lesson. Feeling Keeler's expectant gaze upon him, he finally responded,
"Perhaps they were words best left unsaid."
Humor lifted the other warrior's brows.
"She will not need to make your life a misery. You do it too well yourself."
Madoc acknowledged that with a grunt and began readying Yvain's new mount.
"Best you make peace with her,"
was Keeler's advice.
"If you can."
"Yes, if he could. Madoc was more accustomed to making war, but now he had to be more than a warrior. For that, he needed Yvain. Which must have been why his chest clenched so tightly when he spotted her approaching the stables, Toric at her side. Yvain was not the bride he would have chosen, but she was the bride who would make him a king worthy of his people. In his thoughtlessness, he might have jeopardized everything. Quietly, Keeler said,
"She came down the stairs on her ass. She fell?"
His gaze slipped down her cloaked length. Her stiffness had all but disappeared. She only still favored her left leg. Or was her limp from a new injury? Scowling, he looked to Keeler.
"Why was there no one to catch her? I was directly behind her, which was how I saw what she did."
The warrior replied, his steady gaze on Maddox's bride.
"She did not fall. On the first step, she clung so tightly to the rail it was as if she feared she would fall. Then she sat on the step and went down in that way. Fassad told me she also had difficulty climbing them last eve, as if she did not trust her left leg to hold her."
As she had stumbled into Maddox when she had put weight upon her left leg while leaving the table, as she had collapsed to the ground when her brother had pulled her from their carriage. Maddox had seen her weakness. Apparently he had not seen her suffering. And he knew not what she saw in him now. Her moonstone eyes looked straight through him as he approached, leading her mount. No emotion registered on her delicate features as she first regarded him, then her new mare, then the other warriors and their mounts. Her gaze lingered on the two horses tethered to Bannock's gelding. "You purchased so many?" Maddox would have taken more if there had been more worth buying.
"If we traveled with a Parsathian army, each warrior would have two or three horses so that we might saddle another if one tires or falls lame. With these, we will travel more quickly. We have already lost too much time."
Nodding, she rubbed the mare's muzzle and softly exchanged breaths with the animal before her gaze began searching the stable. "Is there a mounting block?" Because although her riding had improved these past days, still she could not swing herself into the saddle, and she would never be so tall as to raise her foot high enough to reach the stirrup. Instead, she needed a ledge or rock to step upon, or for Maddox to lift her onto the horse's back. Maddox was here, yet she looked for a block, as if she could not bear his touch. Jaw hardening, he clamped his hands around her waist. Instantly she stiffened, though she did not pull away or argue. Silent she remained as he hefted her astride. With both hands she steadied herself on the pommel of her saddle. He did not immediately give over the reins.
"Will you run today if you must?"
Her soft lips thinned before she answered tightly, "I will try, warrior." Warrior. Never had it felt like an insult before, yet that was what she had called him almost from the first moment of their meeting. Almost. Because the first time she had spoken to him, she had called him Ran Maddox. How far and how quickly he had fallen in her estimation. Perhaps because he asked the wrong questions.
"Can you run if you must? Why do you favor your left leg?"
Her pale eyes darted to his face before she deliberately pulled her gaze away from him, offering the stubborn lift of her chin as an answer. He liked the look of that answer, but it was not the one he sought. Did she fear admitting a weakness? She had never seemed reluctant to speak of hers before.
"If I am to protect you, Yvain, I must know what you can and cannot do."
As he expected, her sense outweighed her stubbornness. "I cannot run," she snapped. "3 years past my knee was shattered. It never properly healed." Shattered while she was locked in a tower room?
"How were you hurt?"
Tension gripped him.
"Who hurt you?"
"I prefer not to say. Whenever I reveal anything of myself, warrior, you make weapons from what you learn." A baleful glance was sent his way. "And it matters not. If any Parsathian sacrifices themselves coming to my rescue, you have said you will kill me. Best not to attempt any rescue at all."
"I said that if my warriors fell, I would risk myself."
This time the glance she shot in his direction was guarded, wary, as if she did not trust his word. The muscles at the back of his neck stiffened. To doubt a Parsathian's word was a grave insult, but if Maddox was to make peace, he had to let it pass. Quietly he said,
"When I spoke of warriors sacrificing themselves, I knew nothing of your injury or that you cannot run. I spoke in haste and rage and grief."
Her chin lifted again. "Was it your haste and rage and grief that almost ripped out my tongue?" That he could not let pass.
"You heard my vow and my warning, yet still you spoke with sly tongue yesterday."
"So I did. Twice."
"Three times. Twice."
Her sharpened gaze returned to his. "Once at the ruins, and once while we ate our meal. I should not have attempted to slip mention of her into our conversations. I regret that I did. but I also told you I would not again.
Yet you did again in our bed, unless you will claim it was my warriors and not my mother who said I would please you there.
Why would I make such a claim? I was speaking of my mother. Madoc frowned.
How could she know such a thing?
On a shaky breath, she looked away from him again to gaze blindly ahead, her jaw set. After a moment, she said,
My mother watched you, as she watched every warrior and noble who might eventually make a suitable match for me. She saw you with your lovers and assured me you would see to my pleasure.
Madoc had not taken a lover in years, not since becoming commander of the Alliance Army more than 8 summers past. Had Queen Visenne watched him so long? In disbelief, he searched Yvain's face. He could not know whether she spoke the truth, but it matched what she had claimed before. Her mother had observed many members of the Alliance, and after Jalen had deceived her, surely Queen Visenne would not let another man deceive her daughter in the same way. What better way to know a man's character than to watch him for years? Sick shame returned to his chest. He could still feel Yvain's slick tongue between his fingers. He could still hear her panicked, sobbing breaths as she seized his wrist and tried to prevent him from fulfilling his vow. Had he done so, never would he have known the truth, and he would have not been an oathbreaker. He would have been far worse. He would not ask for her forgiveness. What he had done should not be forgiven. Instead, he offered what poor apology he could. Throat raw, he told her,
I wronged you. For that I am sorry.
In either surprise or incredulity, her moonstone eyes darted to his face again. For a long moment, she simply looked at him. Finally, she said, Was it your haste and rage and grief again? At her measured reply, relief loosened the knot in his chest.
I have been counseled against speaking or making decisions while in the grip of it.
It was wise counsel.
Yes.
Nail's counsel often was, yet Madoc had discarded the Parsathian minister's advice almost immediately upon hearing that Jalen had a daughter.
In the future, I will better heed it.
That is also wise, she said softly, though the ironic smile that followed suggested she did not fully believe it.
You think I will not succeed?
Perhaps. Her shrug was lightweight, unlike her gaze upon his face. In truth, I was thinking of my own poor decision. I cannot blame haste or rage, because my choice of husband was years in the making, but still I regret my choice now. Regretted him, Madoc realized, and the emotion that rose through him was quick and hot and felt like anger, but fury had never clawed painfully at his chest as this emotion did. Still, it sounded the same as fury, harsh and unyielding as he demanded,
Could your marriage to any other man better strengthen the alliance?
Her jaw tightened before she admitted, No.
Is there another who would defy the council and destroy your father?
No.
Who will free your people from his tyranny?
Such a long pause followed, it was as if she desperately tried to think of another name before admitting defeat.
No.
But it mattered not what her answers were. He gripped the pommel of her saddle, covering her hands with his, as his body had covered hers last eve, as he would cover her again on her moon night and every night thereafter. His gaze held steadily to hers as he said,
Do you believe I would ever allow you to choose another?
No. A bitter smile curved her lips. I am your path to vengeance, so let us continue as we are, warrior. So they would, but not exactly as they had been. He gave to her the reins and mounted his own horse, then signaled to Keeler to take the lead before coming up alongside Yvain. At a trot, they started away from the stables, with Madoc watching her new mount. Thus far, her mare seemed placid and steady, suitable for a new rider. When they reached the road, he spoke again.
Do you still intend to make a king of me?
A soft laugh preceded her reply. I will try.
And I will make a warrior queen of you.
At her sudden frown and searching glance, he continued.
Here is your first lesson. Make the best use of what you have. Waste no time with wishes and regrets.
She stared at him for a long moment before a wry smile touched her mouth. And I have you, warrior. Is that what you mean to say?
No, I say what I mean. A warrior makes use of what she has.
Her eyebrows arched in challenge. And I have you.
Yes.
Madoc could not deny that. She had him. It was best that she made use of him. And if the lesson she learned from this was to accept Madoc as her only possible suitor, then he would not unteach her. But there was another he wanted her to learn.
Are you prepared for your second lesson?
Another laugh was her answer. Blown back by the wind, her hood had fallen away from her braided hair, her cheeks already brightened by the ride. His gaze fell to her linen-wrapped calf, exposed as the sides of her cloak and robe flapped against her mount's flanks.
It is the same lesson. Make use of what you have. And if you are in bed with a warrior who intends to rip out your tongue for a false reason, then use the dagger strapped to your leg to defend yourself.
Sudden and sharp was the grin she turned on him. I will, even if the reason is not false. Madoc did not doubt it, and thought he would be wise to strip her of weapons before joining her in his furs that night.
Will you give me true reason?
I have no wish to lose my tongue. And all at once her smile faded, her moonstone gaze solemn. And a Parsathian warrior who betrays a vow cannot be king, yet that is what I intend to make you, so I will not risk my tongue or your crown again. Madoc did not doubt that either, and a warrior wasted no time on regrets, but still must admit the wrongs he'd done, and it was not the threat to her tongue that had sent her from their bed. When he'd let her go, she had lain beside him still. Only after he'd spoken again had she left.
But I told you afterward I should not have. Those were words best left unsaid.
Her face shuddered. Yet you spoke truth, did you not? As Parsathians always do. Through me you will have your vengeance, and you intend to give me nothing more than your seed. Jaw tight, Madoc inclined his head. That was what he intended. A vessel was all Yvain should be to him. And he should not need to keep reminding himself of that. Chin lifting, she looked away from him, casting her gaze down the road ahead. In silence, they rode for 5 long breaths before she spoke again. It was also true what you said of me. I hoped for more from my marriage and my husband. Yet affection and love are not necessary to our purpose, are they?
No.
He answered gruffly, more truth. Yet he had to force it from his tongue. She yearned for more from him. Being certain of what he'd already guessed should not pull at his chest, as if drawing upon some hidden yearning within his own heart. A short nod was her reply, followed by a sidelong glance. Will you ever rescind your vow? And let her speak of his mother?
If ever I believed you would only speak truth.
I would! She shot back without hesitation. I have never lied to you! He gave no reply. Her moonstone gaze searched his face and must have seen the doubt he hadn't voiced. Emphatically, she continued, I have spoken with sly tongue twice, but I have never lied to you. I never will. Such a statement demanded an answer.
Never can I be certain of that.
You will always doubt my word? Madoc believed he would, no matter how he wished otherwise. She would be his bride, his queen, the mother of his children. Of all the words ever spoken, it was hers that he most wanted to trust. But he did not, and he would waste no time wishing. Grimly, he nodded. Her delicate features and unmoving mask, she stared at him with wide and unblinking eyes for many breaths. Finally, she faced forward again, her shoulders straight, her spine stiff. You no longer need to fear that I want more from you, warrior. I require neither your affection nor your trust. All I require is your seed and your protection. As it should be. Yet that was another truth he could not voice. Because even though she no longer wanted more from Madoc, some foolish part of him wanted to give it. Chapter 17. Yvain. The past few days, Yvain would have given much for Madoc to ride beside her. So, of course, on this day, when she would have given much to put distance between them, he never left her side. Her would-be husband said little as they rode, however, and for that she was thankful. Already he had said enough. Their route had veered away from the great river, its waters a rippling glint of silver to the north. Blanketed in tall grass, the Gogian plains stretched endlessly before them. Yvain rode with her chin high and her gaze on the western horizon, fixed at the point where the narrowing road vanished from sight. After a lifetime spent in her tower, she was no good judge of distance. She could not guess how far away the horizon lay. But surely by the time they reached that meeting of ground and sky, this pain would no longer weigh upon her heart so fiercely. Surely by then the sharpened rage clawing up her throat would dull and retreat. Surely the icy bitterness that rimed her tongue would warm and sweeten. Yet although Inam's blinding eye roamed higher through a cloudless sky and Yvain's mare consumed a long span of road beneath her hooves, the horizon remained ever distant. And if Madoc knew of her pain or rage, he seemed not at all burdened by them. He rode as tall as ever, and today he wore armor again. Not since leading the ambush upon the Tolehi road had he donned more than his linens, boots, and belt. Now spalders and vambraces guarded his strong shoulders and arms. No breastplate covered his broad chest, however. Nor did he wear his silver claws or blacken his brow.
prepared for Sisian soldiers to catch up to them, but not yet anticipating a battle. Remembering the hardened feel of him behind her, it seemed no wonder that he did not armor his chest. His heavy pectorals were already like steel. She was looking upon those thick muscles when he glanced over. His dark gaze caught hers as surely as his fingers had caught her tongue, and the ravenous fire in his eyes burned as hot as she had burned against him last eve. His apology for pulling at her tongue had been as sincere as it had been unexpected. But she had trusted his touch once and been hurt by it. Willingly would she lie beneath him on her moon night and every night after, but renewed trust would not come as easily as the flames he stoked within her. Steadily she returned his look. Her tongue and her mind were her greatest weapons, but they were not as effective as her eyes. Even her father and brothers faltered beneath her moonstone gaze. Now she silently regarded Matic, wanting him to back down, wishing that he would just once falter too. But not for a moment did he glance away. Despite her wish, it spoke so well of him that he held her gaze, that he could withstand what so many others could not, that he was not cowed by the goddess Vela looking through her eyes. Such a fine king he would be, even if he would never love or respect his queen. It was she who averted her face then, as the raw ache in her throat built into a stinging burn behind her eyes. This rage and pain would ease, she knew. Perhaps not this day. But Yvain had spoken truth earlier. To be queen of Sisia and Parsath, she did not require his affection. Nor should she give any in return. If Matic would never believe her word, he deserved no portion of her heart, which ought to suit them both, as he wanted no portion of it. But Parsathians were raiders and thieves, so he had already stolen some of it anyway. By Temra's fist, she would protect what was left, and to do it she would heed his lessons well, not only by using her dagger if he threatened her tongue again, but by wasting no time on wishes and regrets. She would not even regret the pain his words had brought. With them he'd taught her a more valuable lesson. He'd taught her how vulnerable her heart was. It was not the first time she'd been given that lesson. Her mother had before, but Yvain had not truly learned it then. Queen Vysen had told her that love was not something to avoid, for when love was given freely or genuinely returned, everyone it touched was strengthened by it. Yet love could also blind, just as anger and hatred and fear did. It could be wielded as a weapon. It could hurt when it was rejected or betrayed or lost. It could be confused with lust or with pleasure or with gratitude, for it often entwined with other emotions and was not so easily separated from them. Her mother had tried to teach her how to recognize the difference. She'd served as Yvain's eyes beyond the tower, had discussed the character of everyone she'd seen, and had warned her of all the ways people might attempt to take advantage of her heart. In that, she'd prepared Yvain as best she could. It was not the manipulations of others that had worried Queen Vysen most, however, because Yvain's father and older brothers had schooled her well. Instead, she feared that Yvain had been starved for love, just as they'd been often starved for food, and that, once released from their tower, Yvain would grasp for any affection, no matter how slight, simply to feel full. But Yvain had not believed herself in so much danger. All of her life she'd known love that was strong and unwavering. First her mother's, then her younger brother's, and, for a short time, Rana Shev's. True, she'd been piercingly lonely following her mother's death, but the memory of Queen Vysen's love had sustained her then, as had Yvain's love for her people. Love had strengthened her, just as her mother had claimed it would. Love and the hope that her father's rule would soon find its end. And knowing love, Yvain had never imagined that she would be so hungry for Matic's heart, or as dazzled by his touch as she was dazzled by the expanse of the sky and the warmth of the sun. Perhaps that was why her mother had feared so much, because after knowing love all her life, Yvain hadn't truly conceived of a future without it, especially not from her chosen husband, not from the warrior she'd spent so many years admiring from afar. Yet that future was what she faced now, and Matic had not only denied all possibility of love between them, he'd also destroyed a hope that was so great a part of her that she'd not even realized how much of her heart it had filled. The emotions churning within her were not just pain and anger, but also grief for the hope her warrior had killed. This grief would pass. When it did, then she would do as he'd suggested and find the love she longed for with their children and their people, and she would be all the stronger for it. But that would not be today. Today she would begin the painstaking process of disentangling her emotions. For when they stopped at midday, Matic was at her mount's side before she had even swung her leg over the saddle. He gripped her waist, easing her from the horse's back. Unbidden pleasure flared at his touch, her entire body responding to his proximity,
and her heart responding to the care he took with her. That desire she would allow to grow. Yvain would accept no less than pleasure from him in their bed, and arousal could be separated from love. She had seen it herself. Ardal and Keeler had no deep feelings for the barmaid, yet pleasure was had by each of them. But within Yvain, desire's roots were entwined with futile hope, and with the sweet emotion that had been nurtured by years of Queen Vysen telling her what sort of man Matic was, by the short time his mother had told her the same, and even by the shorter time Yvain had known him. So she had to let that sweeter emotion wither. She had to starve it, until only physical arousal remained, and until she never mistook the gentleness in his touch for affection. Because although Matic helped her dismount, assistance was not caring. He helped her down because her knee might collapse under her weight, and an injury might slow their journey, because she was a vessel and of no use to him broken. Yet even as that knowledge dug painfully into her heart, where the roots of hope were still so deeply embedded, happiness bloomed when Matic did not immediately set her down. Instead, he held her above the ground with his hands clasped around her waist and his eyes locked upon her own. And the warmth that spread through her was not only physical, but so sweet again. This love within her was a tenacious seed that kept reaching for Matic as if he were the sun. Strong, just as her mother had said. Love and hope would not wither in a day, perhaps not even within a 7-night. But she had to starve them to the roots. So if his touch nurtured those emotions, then to protect herself it was best that she avoid his touch, at least until her moon night, when she could avoid it no longer. She could not avoid it now. Stiffly, she waited for Matic to let her down. Instead, he held her, his gaze level with hers, her feet dangling. Automatically, Yvain gripped his forearms to steady herself. Heated by the sun, the drape of skin covering his vambraces was warm as life, the pebbled texture worn smooth between the scars of battle. Aside from that small movement, she remained quiet, her body rigid. Abruptly, a frown darkened Maddox's expression. She couldn't imagine what prompted it until he said,
"You no longer soften against me. Have I made you fear my touch?"
No. Trust would not come easy again, yet she feared no physical harm at his hands. But she was already hurt and feared that her future held more pain if she softened. So there was no simple answer, yet his question was likely simple. He wondered if she was terrified of him. So there was truth in the shake of her head. That response seemed not to relieve Matic, or perhaps he assumed that she lied again. His frown deepened into angry frustration.
"Your face tells me nothing."
Yvain could not be sorry for that. If she wore her emotions as plainly as the Parsathians did, what would her face say to him now? That her heart yearned and ached? Should she give him reason to declare again that she could never earn his trust or his love? She should not. So this time she gave no reply at all. Eyes narrowing, he studied her for a moment longer before hissing a breath from between his teeth.
"Do you sense dark magics here?"
Irritation burned away the ache. Did he trust nothing she said? "I vowed to tell you when I do," she snapped. "And as I have no desire to see thrice-cursed wraiths sucking the blood from my dripping entrails while I scream my last mortal breaths, if I sense anything amiss, I will let you know." And Yvain could read his face easily, but she could make no sense of what it told her now, for Matic seemed pleased. Not amused, as if finding humor in her answer or laughing at her vehemence, but satisfied by it. Yet what pleasure could he take in her response?
"So my punishment has come to an end?"
he softly asked. What punishment? Utterly confused now, she arched her brows in question. Matic could surely read that upon her face. But instead of giving an answer, he gently set her to her feet.
"You will ride the roan mare when we start off again."
Wearing a faint smile, he loosened her cinch knot before turning to unsaddle his own horse.
"If you must tend to your own needs while they rest, do it quickly. We will not remain here long."
Only long enough for the horses to drink and briefly eat. However, it was not the length of this rest that concerned Yvain, but the next, when they would stop to make camp. Slipping her fingers beneath the band of leather he'd loosened, she tugged until the knot came free. "How far until the next village?"
2 days' hard ride."
A soft grunt accompanied his answer, and then he turned again to face her, his great roll of furs propped upon his shoulder and his saddle gripped in his left hand.
"Did you hope for another bed at an inn? My furs will be soft enough. Only this time I would keep you against me the full night."
Then he must have forgotten what she told him when she left the bed, that she had no desire to share his until her moon night. That had been absolute truth. and although she yearned for the pleasure he'd given her, she could not protect her heart if she allowed him so close. Even now it pounded like the hoofbeats of a galloping steed, as the thought of another night with him raced through her blood. Yet she had to starve the sweeter emotions that accompanied that fire, not feed them. "I hoped not for an inn," she said, reaching up and taking firm hold of her pommel and cantle, "but to purchase my own bedding." Dragging the saddle from her mount's back took all of her strength, as did bearing its weight without staggering, and so she could not even note Maddox's response until, abruptly, she bore no weight at all. He hauled the seat out of her grip. Then his response was all she could see, for he crowded close. Thick biceps bulged, the sinews of his wrists and hands standing in sharp relief, as if holding her saddle were an effort, yet she knew it was not. Leather creaked under the tightness of his grip, the knuckles of his powerful fingers whitening. His faint smile had vanished. Below dark eyes that flashed hot and feral, volcanic tension pulled the skin across his cheekbones taut. Yet despite the barely restrained violence within his massive body, still Yvonne did not fear him. Lifting her chin, she met his enraged gaze and silently challenged him to deny her. He did, his response emerging on a dangerous snarl.
"You will sleep in my furs this night, and every night.
And as I said last eve, I will not lie beside you until my moon night." Perhaps he had not forgotten. Perhaps he had, once again, not believed her word. Now his smoldering gaze scoured her face as if searching for truth. He must have realized that this was no lie, for the rage in his gaze dimmed. She knew not what to make of the bleak resolve that replaced it or the softness of his gruff reply.
"Then I will let you sleep alone, but you will be in my furs."
That distance would have to be enough then. She could see no use in arguing further, as purchasing her own bedding today was impossible, and if they were to be married and serve as queen and king of two territories, surely it would not be the first compromise that she and Maddox made. They had both made demands. They would both get what they wanted, with modifications. On a sharp nod, she offered her agreement, then looked for more anger, but could see none. Instead, he wore that same grim resolve in his firmed mouth and clenched jaw. His dark gaze held hers for another long moment, and then he glanced over her head to where Bannock and Ardal were caring for the extra horses.
"Shall I carry this for you?"
Her heavy saddle. Her throat oddly tight, she shook her head. "I prefer to do as much as I can." Carefully, he gave it back to her, making certain she had a steady grip before releasing the full weight. "Thank you," she said softly. An equally soft grunt dismissed her gratitude. He gathered her horse's lead.
"I will take them to water. Stay near Ardal when you piss. You are not yet a warrior queen."
And able to protect herself, Yvonne knew that very well. Maddox did too, and he had told her so many times before. But to hear him say it so differently now, "not yet a warrior queen," filled her with such pain and hope and confusion. She bore them along with the saddle's weight across the small clearing, though it was not even properly a clearing, but an area of flattened grasses that formed a thick mat upon the ground. All around them grew stalks taller than Yvonne. When mounted, she could see over their seed-heavy heads. Now she could not, and it was as if a nodding wall of green surrounded them. A stream burbled across the western edge of the clearing, the water cutting deeply into the soft earth, so that the horses had to be led carefully down its steep banks. Ardal and Bannock had not yet led theirs to drink, because they were waiting for her. Ardal had already signaled out the roan, holding it ready to saddle, which Yvonne would not be doing alone, she realized, the moment she stepped up beside the mare. Though this mount was not as tall as the full-blooded Parsathian horses, it was much taller than her gelding had been, and to lift the seat onto that horse's back, she had always needed a stone or a stump to step upon. There was nothing of the like here. Lips flattened in irritation, she looked to Ardal for help. The warrior grinned as she took the heavy saddle and easily set it into place. With a strain upon her shoulders and back relieved, Yvonne let out a long breath, then rolled her neck from side to side. As soon as Ardal stepped aside, she moved forward again, stalks crunching beneath her sandals. Bannock had made her practice tying the cinch strap repeatedly during her first days upon the gelding, and she did again under his watchful eye. The process of making the leather knot, walking the horse a few steps, then tightening the cinch again was so familiar now, however, that she need not give it her full attention. "What do you think happened here that these grasses are stamped into the ground?" The older warrior answered,
"It was a bed for a family of Mirans."
Armored reptiles with hammer-like tails. Yvonne had seen trails broken through the grass where the reptiles had crossed the road, but had not yet laid eyes on one. Though they were large animals, they weren't tall and remained concealed within the grass. Many dangers lurked between the stalks, which was why Ardal would accompany Yvain when she relieved herself, because she was not yet a warrior queen. Throat aching, she pulled hard upon the leather. Beside her, Bannock continued,
"In the autumn, when the great herds move through, not a blade of grass will be left standing. They strip this plain to the soil."
"And Temra be merciful to anyone traveling upon this road then," Ardal added with a laugh. "They are more likely to be trampled beneath the fanhead's feet than reach Drom."
So they would take the road on the northern side of the Agaras instead. Yes,